A Wednesday, we always talk it over with Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com, and so much baseball to get into, whether it's on the national perspective, the minor league perspective, what's happening with the St. Louis Cardinals. And as always, Brian, good morning to you. Hopefully things are going well for you and your family.
Absolutely. Good morning to you as well, Dan. Yeah, there's a lot to talk about today. Where do you want to begin?
Well, last time that we were talking, and I was in your camp, I thought the Cardinals would pick up the option for Wong, and at least it would give them some time to figure out what they wanted to do. They have not picked up that option, obviously, so Wong is out there for anybody to take a look at. They save $11.5 million, and then there were some comments made by John Mozeliak that we'll get into with the press conference to address that. But just initially, what did you think of now you don't have Colton Wong in the fold, at least right now? Now, you never say never, could come back. I don't think that's going to be the case, else they would have brought him back. But what did you think of them not bringing Colton Wong back?
Well, what I misread, Dan, was the overall market. I mean, we knew that revenues were down. We knew that major league teams were going to, you know, be careful in the offseason this year. But it's far beyond careful. I mean, there were players even better quality than Colton Wong. Brad Hand, the closer in Cleveland, one of the best in the game, let go for over $10 million. So what we're seeing is, you know, major league teams basically, you know, digging the trenches, and Wong became a group of very good players in the market. And what that means for the St. Louis Cardinals is they've taken a risk on their defense up the middle. You know, we don't know if Harrison Bader is going to hit enough to play every day. Now Wong's gone, and there's a potential that Yadier Molina won't come back. So the gamble is that the Cardinals are taking a strength of their team defense and, you know, taking a step backward potentially for 2021. And I think that's definitely risky. But, I mean, I understand where they're coming from money. But, of course, the big question is, and Bill talked a little bit about it on 101 the other day, you know, how much money do they have to spend to improve a team that we know lacked power last year?
Tommy Edman would be the guy, I would assume, right now, currently constructed, and we are a long ways away from spring training, that would be at second base. When he was in the minor leagues, Brian, and you dive into the minor leagues better than anybody, how did he look at second base defensively? How do you think he would fit in to playing in that role on an everyday level at the major league level?
You know, it's interesting. Tommy Edman was primarily a shortstop coming up, and he was an everyday shortstop. And, you know, as he got closer to the majors, they played him a little more at second base just to, you know, round him out because, of course, you know, typically when prospects come up, they don't get a starting job day one. So, but Edman is a solid defender. And interestingly enough, the Fielding Bible Awards, which is a defensive award that came out, Edman was like the second or third ranked defender cross position in their metrics for the major league in the National League this year. In the major leagues this year. So, and Edman is a perfectly capable second baseman. You know, but he's not Colton Wong. You know, he's just not. The real question with Edman for me isn't his defense. I think he'll be fine at second base. He won't be exceptional. The question will be, which Tommy Edman are we going to see at the plate? Are we going to see the 2019 Tommy Edman, who was above average and had some pop in his bat and was really an exciting player to watch? Or are we going to see the 2020 Tommy Edman, which was kind of, you know, he's okay, but he's not anybody that's, you know, causing any excitement. And that was coupled with the fact that he was moved to the second spot in the batting order, which is a very, very important place to be to set the table for the guys in the middle. And Edman, like most of the rest of the Cardinals' offense, you know, didn't perform up to his prior standards last year.
So we saw last night Colton Wong wins his second Gold Glove and Tyler O'Neill wins a Gold Glove. I had a coach tell me that if given a chance to play every day, and this is a couple of years ago, Tyler O'Neill in the minor leagues is a Gold Glove player, caliber player, and had done that before. He said he is that good defensively. The metrics, I guess, showed that this year. I didn't see that, but, you know, the metrics showed that. What did you think of Tyler O'Neill winning that Gold Glove?
Well, Tyler O'Neill, according to the metrics that what I saw, and I'm not a great expert on defensive metrics, I will admit, but they showed that he was exceptional at getting jumps, at getting reads, at positioning. And positioning, of course, is also something that really probably the Cardinals coaching staff should get more credit for than the player, because of course, you know, where he's positioned is where basically the metrics tell them they need to be. But O'Neill did a great job of getting to the ball. We saw that he very rarely, if ever, threw to the wrong base. His throws were strong. They were consistent. He was just a solid overall player left. Now, you know, we got to realize, and I don't want to diminish his results by any in any means, but it was a 60-game season. So, you know, over the course of 162, you know, well, what would have happened? In a normal year for the Gold Gloves, the coaches and managers vote 75% of the score. This year, they didn't vote at all, so it was completely metrics-driven. So I think in a way, Tyler O'Neill slipped in and won the Gold Glove, where in a normal year, the coaches might have gone with someone who had more name recognition, someone they had seen a lot. But you understand why they didn't do the coach and managers voting this year, because nobody saw anybody but in their own divisions, right? The Central saw the Central, the East saw the East. So there's no way anybody could evaluate, no, you know, none of the East or the West coaches could evaluate O'Neill's defense this year because they never saw it.
In terms of going back to Wong, they made the announcement, John Mozeliak did, and Brian Walton is my guest, about that option, or yeah, the option not being picked up. And then he had some general comments just about the team, kind of state of the union of the St. Louis Cardinals. What were some of the things that you picked up from that? I was on that call. You were on that call, that Zoom call. What were some of the things that stood out to you from John Mozeliak?
He just wasn't really optimistic. And by the way, if you come over to the Cardinal Nation, there's a story about that. And there's also the full video that I believe Channel 5 put up. So you can listen to, you know, the 45 minutes of John Mozeliak yourself. But, you know, normally Mo's optimistic. He's talking about being opportunistic. He's talking about flexing payroll muscle. And, you know, there wasn't really any of that. I mean, he kind of talked about creativity, but I just felt like John Mozeliak was sending a message to lower everybody's expectations about what the team's able to do for 2021. Now, I don't know whether Mozeliak personally wanted to keep Wong or not, but my sort of reading was, you know, he was really, you know, not conflicted, but he was certainly down on the fact that they had to let him go. But, you know, he certainly explained why very clearly, that the Cardinals need to cut payroll, and that was one of the few levers that they have to pull. You know, it's a difficult situation for the Cardinals this winter. The positive is that the market is going to be depressed. There was some analysis, I think was at Viva Alberto's, that they did looking at the players that were kept for next year and the ones that were let go to look at the value of a win, you know, what one WAR would be worth. In a normal year, that's $8 to $10 million in the free agent market. This year, the view is it might be half that. So, you know, if you could go out and bargain hunt and get a player for, say, half his value on a one-year contract for 2021, that would be a really opportunistic play. The question is, do the Cardinals have any payroll to do it? And, the first questions that have to be answered is, what's going to happen with Molina and Wainwright? Because the reading I get is that if those two come back, and they get a, you know, reasonable salary for them, of course, they won't come back unless it is, there's not going to be much money to do anything else.
Yeah, and the thing he also stressed that I took away was patience. The market needs to set up. We're not sure about if and when the vaccine rolls out in time for baseball. What does the model look like for Major League Baseball with all teams in terms of, will there be people in the stands? Is it 25%, 50%, 100%? And that dictates the revenue model of what you may be able to spend. So patience, I think, is going to be something that we're all going to have in this offseason as we love to play that hot stove game.
Yeah, Dan. And, you know, the thing that strikes me about that point that you're on is we don't know much about that at all here in early November. But chances are pretty darn good we're not going to know any more about it in early January. Or early February when teams report. Yeah, we'll know a little more, certainly. But unless some magical, you know, unless there's a, you know, a huge turnaround in the environment that we're in, there are still going to be questions when it gets to the point in time in which teams have to sign players for next year. And so I get it. The whole market's going to stall. There's no doubt about it. There's not going to be, nobody's going to be the first one to risk overpaying for players when they don't have to. And by the way, I should say, I'm interrupting myself, but December 2nd is a key date. Nothing's going to happen in the next month until December 2nd. And why I say that is December 2nd is the non-tender date for arbitration eligible players. And that's the players between 3 and 6 years of experience. San Diego, for example, is going to have a decision on Tommy Pham. Do they want to pay him $7 or $8 million next year? In a normal year, sort of like Colton Wong, you say that's a slam dunk. Well, maybe not. Maybe they'll set him loose. The point is there are going to be a lot of more guys thrown into the free agent market, and so teams are going to want to wait and see who's available before they decide to start to sign guys. So I will be stunned over the next month if there's a lot of signing of anybody in any way. But again, you know, the virus is right, is sort of in control of what's going to happen. And, you know, at some point in time, teams are going to have to take some risk not knowing whether they're even going to play 162 games. I mean, the schedules are out there and all that, but they might not be able to do it.
Another aspect of this, too, the designated hitter. And that's for both the player and potential free agent player and maybe trade, but and the clubs. You know, if you're a National League club and you know that you've got a DH that's in play next year, that changes the complexion of your lineup and what you may do in the offseason. So that's something that needs to be settled, I would think, sooner rather than later.
Well, the problem, yes, you're right, Dan. That would be great, I mean, for everybody if they knew for sure what the rules were going to be. Now, on the other side of the coin, they didn't decide last year until June, until right before the season started. Maybe it was May, I don't know. Right before the season started, before they made the decision on the DH. And everybody figured it out okay, and I have a story up. I went through the numbers. The Cardinals actually benefited from the designated hitter, which I was surprised. You know, I figured it was a net down for them, but they actually benefited. But anyway, but here's the problem, Dan, and you know this already, but maybe some of the listeners don't. Adding the designated hitter or bringing it back has to be collectively bargained between owners and players. And there are a whole bunch of things that we went through last year that they're going to have to go through again for 2021. What's the length of the season going to be? How much are players going to get paid if we can't play 162 games? You know, are we going to have expanded playoffs? But all those things have to be negotiated. And making a decision on the designated hitter, which might be perceived as a give to the players, is not something the owners are going to give up without getting something in return. And so there's a whole bunch of negotiations about next season that we know nothing about that go against the idea of making that decision quickly. The owners will establish a position quickly. Mo mentioned, you know, they're going to talk about it in the general managers meetings, which are, I think, this week or next week. But even if the owners have a position, that doesn't mean the players are going to go along with it. So I think the designated hitter needs to be decided soon, but I'm not sure it's going to be, though.
Minor league free agents, that's something that needs to be talked about too, and that's sometimes where you can get a bargain or two along the way and supplement rosters and 40-man and that kind of thing, and you know, guys develop. What do you take away with minor league free agents right now?
Well, the Cardinals had, about 15 guys, and they re-signed five of them already, but they're guys who contributed to St. Louis last year who are now free agents. I'm talking about Nabil Chrismat. I'm talking about Rob Kaminsky, Ricardo Sanchez briefly. So some players that were contributors, but the way the system works, when they get taken off the 40-man roster, they're no longer protected by an organization. And so this whole group of guys are now minor league free agents, and they've got to fend for themselves. And you talk about the major league market being stalled. I mean, there's more uncertainty about the minor leagues as to whether they're going to play, how many games they're going to play, how many teams are going to be out there. What the schedule is going to be. There's just so many questions. It's going to be an even tougher market, I think, for minor league free agents this coming winter.
Yeah, we still have no final list of the 120 minor league teams, and that is still kind of dangling out there for Major League Baseball, isn't it?
It is, and there's some good reasons why. According to a story I read, I think it was at Baseball America, they speculated that 130 team owners right now believe that they're in. And, you know, it's kind of like the game of musical chairs, right? Until the music stops, you don't know who's going to be out without a place to put their rear end, without a seat to put them in. And there are some things going on right now as Major League Baseball takes control of the minor leagues, where they put out new guidelines on how they want to see the facilities upgraded. And it's not just better lights, it's bigger clubhouses and much, much more. Things that are going to cost the minor league team owners money. They've come out with new guidelines regarding travel, which are going to make the minor leagues better for the coaches and players. More buses, sleeper coaches, a shorter amount of time without having to get to a hotel room, for example, because some of the places like Texas League, just unbearably long bus rides. So a bunch of things going on that you look at the surface and say, hey, that's really good. They're going to make the minor leagues a better place. But those team owners are looking at these expenses going, hey, I'm the one that's got to cover all these expenses, right? If we have two buses, I got to pay for two buses. If there's hotel rooms, I got to pay for hotel rooms. So part of the shakedown to 120 could be, and this is just my personal theory, some of these owners saying, hey, I can't cut it. I'm not going to play anymore. So, you know, we don't know for sure when the 120 are going to be announced, but when they are, there are going to be some teams very, very upset.
Brian Walton is my guest, thecardinalnation.com. You can imagine, Brian, a lot of people curious about your thoughts on Yachty and Adam Wainwright. Whether that would happen here in St. Louis, they get the contract done here or somewhere else, and if it happens soon or if they let the market develop as well. What are your thoughts on those two coming back potentially to town, or just trying to get their situation settled fairly quickly?
Well, I got to say, I'm a little disappointed. Yadi's brother, Benji, has gone and sort of done the media tour, and he's playing the respect card. And that really turned me off. He was on Riz and BK, among other shows. And, you know, talked about the fact, I can't believe the Cardinals didn't get a deal done with Yadi. Well, listen, Benji, if you understand how the CBA works, the cooperative bargaining agreement, the Cardinals couldn't have got a deal done sooner with Yadi because they would have had to pay him $16 million a year. And if they pay him $16 million a year in this climate, they're crazy. So the reason Yadi reached the market was that's the way the business of baseball works. Now, do I think Yadi's going to sign quickly or when? I don't see it. The Cardinals have cleared roster space, so they could sign them without having to let anybody else go. But, you know, I went through an analysis, and people can go to the Cardinal Nation and read about this. Not looking at where Yadi might sign or how much he might sign, but I sat down and thought, okay, if I'm Yadi or Molina, what factors are going to matter to me? I mean, there are people who run around and, you know, every time, you know, Tony La Russa gets hired in Chicago, so, oh my gosh, he's going to go to Chicago and he's going to be co-manager. Or Yadi's going to go wherever Waino goes. Or he wants to go to a warm weather team. Or none of that matters, in my opinion. What matters to Molina should be, where can I play every day because I'm trying to increase my personal stats and games played? Where can I win another World Series? Where can I get a contract that's respectful to me, which is 2 years and money? And then, of course, another factor is, hey, I'd like to remain a career Cardinal. But that's not going to be the number one. So I kind of went through the analysis to say, you know, of those factors, how does it look? And, you know, unless the Cardinals open up the purse strings, it's not a guarantee that Yadi's going to stay.
I think he's going to stay. I think they're going to find a way to do this. You know the situation with the ownership group here, and it's not like looking at the Pujols situation, which was a decade-long contract and personal services deal, so on and so forth. This is a two-year deal, and the legacy part of this is important, I think. Matter of fact, I know, to the DeWitts. What do you yep. think about that and how that factors into what they may do?
I agree, Dan. I think that both sides want to get the deal done. But, you know, it's funny. Ever since the Mozeliak call and Bill DeWitt III's done some media things as well, I've seen sort of a shift in fan perception. There are more than a few fans now who have sort of said, you know, who sort of see the Cardinals' overall plan that says, hey, 2022 is when we're really going to be able to do some things to improve the team. But because of some bad contracts, you know, we've got to kind of keep status quo for a year. Well, unless you believe the Cardinals are going to be World Series contenders next year, and I don't think we do. One of the things I felt with the expanded playoffs was it sort of shook out the poorer teams one more round. The teams that got, you know, were in the World Series were the best two teams, in my opinion, in each league. And so, you know, yeah, maybe the Cardinals can contend for the playoffs next year, but I don't think anybody sees the Cardinals as World Series contenders. Well, in that environment, do you want to spend the money on Waino and Yadi and kind of have it be the farewell tour and that's how you market next year and all? Or do you want to bite the bullet and say, hey, you know, it's time to start the transition now. The more we can play younger players in 2021, the better we can be positioned for 2022. So, yeah, I think, you know, Yadi will come back. But if he sets his sights too high, like Marcell Ozuna did last winter, and he wants too many years and too much money, you know, it might not end well.
In terms of just looking at what's happening with baseball, I only see, and maybe you may agree or disagree on this, I only see maybe four teams initially spending a lot of money, with Mets probably being at the forefront of that with their new ownership, really deep pockets. You always think the Yankees are going to be in there. You probably include the Dodgers, maybe some other teams, one or two. And then outside of that, that's why this is going to take so long for this market to develop. I really believe that.
Absolutely. You know, I think the top guys are going to get their money. I mean, the George Springers, right? They're going to get their money. LeMahieu's, you know, they're the cream of the crop. They're going to get their money. It may take a while, but they'll get it. You know, it's sort of like, remember the Machado and Harper market and how everybody was gnashing their teeth a couple of years ago that, oh my gosh, you know, there's collusion and all. Well, they got their contracts. It just took, you know, into the new year, quite a ways into the new year. And I think that'll happen this year. I think where, you know, the guys that are really going to get hurt are the guys kind of in the middle, right? That and at the low end, who normally might be able to get a multi-year, a 2 or 3 year deal. They might have to settle for 1 year and for less money than they wanted. But as you said, you know, it's going to take a long time for this to shake out. January, February, you know, camps may open with guys, you know, not having teams. And that's going to cause a lot of consternation. among players, especially while they're still trying to negotiate what 2021 is going to look like in terms of money and structure. And, oh, by the way, you know, just X number of months in the future, in December 2021, they're supposed to have the negotiations done for a new cooperative bargaining agreement, which would completely, you know, set the rules for the game for the next 5 years. And, you know, that's going to be a contentious process as well. So there's going to be a lot of baseball talk over the next, you know, 12 months about non-playing aspects of the game.
Matthew Liberatore and Nolan Gorman. So if this was a normal season, Brian, and they played in the minor leagues, and let's just say they had a normal, you know, trajectory in the minor leagues and a solid season, whatever that may look like in the minor leagues, what would they be doing in 2021 coming up? And would there be the potential that you would see maybe one of these guys make a debut at the end of a season?
Well, a year ago at this time when we were talking about Nolan Gorman, I thought a similar path to Dylan Carlson was very reasonable. And that meant Gorman goes, he plays in the Texas League, maybe he, you know, scuffles a little bit in the beginning, he finds his way, and then late in the season he gets to Memphis. Maybe he plays in the Arizona Fall League. Probably plays in the Arizona Fall League. And gets himself positioned to go to 2021 spring camp, training camp with an opportunity to compete for a spot with the Cardinals. Now, we didn't have that opportunity last year, obviously, so Nolan Gorman didn't get to play in Double-A. He got to play in alternate camp, and that's certainly better than nothing, but it's not the same. So the question is going to be, and as we look at the roster right now, as of today, Matt Carpenter is more than likely your everyday third baseman. And there's reasons why they want to make sure that, you know, Matt Carpenter doesn't get his 600 and whatever plate appearances so that his expensive contract vests for 2021, his expensive option. So, you know, what could you do? Could you put Nolan Gorman on the fast track and get him ready potentially to join St. Louis in the second half? Yeah, maybe he stubs his toe. Maybe he scuffles like Dylan Carlson did when he first came up. But 2021 is going to be 2021 anyway. So I think there's a way the Cardinals could – the short version of my long-winded answer is I think the Cardinals could do some things to accelerate Gorman to potentially get him into St. Louis in the second half and set the table for 2022.
Brian, you've had so much great information today. I always tell everybody go to thecardinalnation.com. So what are you working on right now?
Well, we started – the thing we didn't talk about, we started our annual top 50 countdown of the best prospects in the major leagues, and I have joining me a really sharp scouting mind, Matt Thompson from Prospects Live, who's doing scouting reports, and then I'm writing the stories around them. And we'll have one new prospect we unveil a day for the remainder of the year. So far, we started out with Brendan Donovan, Edgar Escobar, and today's story is about outfielder Connor Capel. So prospect news every day throughout the winter at the Cardinal Nation.
My man, great stuff. Thanks as always, and we'll catch you up next Wednesday. Appreciate it.
Take care, Dan.